Hey guys, before we get rolling here, I just want to thank those of you who have left me a review on iTunes. This helps me keep the podcast free, so please keep them coming. Tell your friends. I also want to thank those guys that have been sending in the questions. This is what this podcast is about. It's about getting you the info that you need to help become a better hunter. Now you can actually go to my website, interviewswiththehuntingmasters.com, and click on the Ask the Pro section. And you can send me your questions there, and you can even suggest a guest. And lastly, before we jump into this episode, I want to shed a little light on one of my sponsors, Sneak Tech Sneak Boots. I've been wearing them now for several years, and they've really upped my stalking game. I'm not a very sneaky person, and I find that extra added stealthiness that they give me has really, really improved my stalk. I believe in them so much that I've decided to give away one pair each month to a lucky subscriber. So if you're a subscriber, once a month, I'm going to be announcing a winner to win a pair of Sneak Tech boots. So go ahead and go check them out at sneaktech.com, and that's SneekTech.com. Let's get to the next episode. Hi, and welcome to the Interviews with the Masters podcast, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. This week, we have a special guest, a good friend of mine. He heads up the Mule Deer Foundation. He's a regional director in Arizona and Southern Nevada, and does a lot of awesome stuff for the critters that we love to hunt. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Terry Herndon. How are you?
Doing good. How are you doing, John?
Man, I can't complain. It's enjoying the fact that we got a little bit of break from the super hot weather. But it's not going to last very long, from what I understand. It's supposed to be back up to like 115 or something like that next week. So
it's a dry heat.
Yeah. It's always an acetylene torch, but you wouldn't stick your face in it. But anyway, so why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself, and then we'll jump into some questions.
Well, basically, about 4.5 years ago, I was hired by the Mule Deer Foundation, who's actually their home base is in Salt Lake City, Utah. And the number one thing that they emphasize is that we needed to work on mule deer and mule deer habitat. Mission statement, basically saving mule deer 1 acre at a time. Mm-hmm. And since we've been on board, that's exactly what we've been doing. Typically, we have anywhere from 2,500 to 3,000 hours of volunteer times each year on the ground, and stick anywhere from $70,000 to $80,000 in chapter rewards, is what we call them, that we generate through our fundraisers on the ground itself. Worked hard with ranchers to keep access open for hunters and recreationists all over the state. Got about 6 adopter ranch programs we're working on now, and basically just getting out there and trying to help where we can help. We focus primarily south of the Grand Canyon down to the border of Mexico to New Mexico and across to California. Reason why we do that is we consider 98.9% of all hunters hunt in these areas. Mm-hmm. They pay for 100% of everything that happens in Arizona for wildlife, and we want to make sure we make it better for them and for the mule deer in these areas. I think this is where the big bang for the buck is for mule deer in itself. So we hit heavy in the desert areas and anywhere in between.
Cool. How did you get started in hunting yourself?
Walking behind my dad, hanging onto his pocket when I was about 3 years old. You know, it's, mm-hmm. You know, I can remember my tennis shoes that we had back then, because, you know, hunting the boots wasn't anything we thought about. And my dad had cowboy boots on, and I'd have my little tennis shoes on. I'd be going behind, my feet were freezing. I was dying and loved every dang minute of it. I mean, you know, I watched my dad shoot a buck and pretty much hook after that. I love the outdoors. I love the experience of hunting. That's, I think that's where we're calling that a fan like we used to back when I was a kid. You know, in Arizona, when it changed up to draw only in about 1973, I think it was. Yeah, you know, a week before that, we had camps of anywhere from 50 to 100 family members in that camp. So we had basically a hunting pod. After they went to the draw system, of course, we have four applicants on there. And typical applicants are buddies who want to get together and hunt. And that means the kids stay home, the wives stay home, and the rest of the thing. We have to try to figure out a way to get hunting in for big game. I mean, we can do the small stuff, but it just doesn't have the impact big game hunting does.
Yeah, for sure. You're starting to come in a little choppy. I don't know if I'm assuming you're on Wi-Fi, right?
Yeah, I am. Hmm.
Yeah,
this is out in Whitman, by the way, John. So
yeah,
Wi-Fi's not always the best.
10-4. I believe there is a button that you can, or setting that you can use that says, I think it's under settings, low bandwidth or something like that.
I'm not seeing it, but let me check real quick here.
I'd have to look. I'm on the desktop, so I'm not on the app. But.
Yeah. I'm going up and down. Let me see what this tool thing says here. Custom presence. Network issues. Switch to phone audio. Tap here to switch over to your phone audio to continue your meeting. Would that help if I did that, or?
I think you'd just be audio and not video, which is fine. We don't necessarily have to release this as a video.
Let's just hope it'll clear itself up.
Yeah, I mean, so far now you've been good for a little bit, the last 2 minutes here. All right. Well,
okay.
Roll back into this. So that's, you know, pretty much how a lot of the guys I know got started in hunting. You know, I think that's pretty typical of United States. You know, your dad or somebody in your family gets you into it.
Sure.
Although you do get the few where, you know, I've actually interviewed a few people that it was like a friend of the family or their friend's dad, stuff like that, which is kind of cool. I think those stories are even cooler because somebody took the time that wasn't related to bring them into it.
Yeah. Mentorship's everything.
I mean, yeah. Exactly.
We believe heavily in that.
Exactly. So you started touching on some of the stuff that you guys are doing here in Arizona and stuff like that. What does Mule Deer Foundation do as a whole, really, for, you know, in the United States for Mule Deer?
Well, we try to, I mean, it's a pretty simple mission statement. It's to help black-tailed deer and mule deer in their habitat. And basically we'll go to the, Game and Fish or the NDRs or wherever they are all over the country. And we talk to them to see where we can go in with the heaviest impact and try to help the mule deer in those areas. We all have, there's 160 chapters now throughout the United States. And ironically, we actually have some in Virginia, which is, you know, there's not a heavy presence of mule deer there.
No.
But we have people who love to hunt mule deer that doesn't have an issue with going to the banquets, the fundraiser, generating, you know, the funds to get back to the West and help us out. Excuse me. You know, as you know, John, mule deer are the only ones, the ungulate family, that's actually struggling right now to stay on their feet. The coos deer, the caribou, you know, certain areas, the moose and elk and all of them are doing quite well. Mule deer, on the other hand, they struggle. And, you know, the biggest struggle is they're actually more timid than, let's say, your typical coos or cows deer. You know, those little guys are just hardy as all get out. They can go anywhere they want. They can eat anything they have to have. They can sleep underneath a, you know, cottontail backside too. They're so small.
Right.
Whereas a mule deer competition with other animals, especially elk. I mean, elk is, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but elk, they weren't actually native to Arizona in a lot of areas we have them at now, but the mule deer were. And you got to consider what an elk eats. You know, you can forage pretty well all over the ground. Then when the snow covers everything up, they can reach high into a tree and eat it all gone. Well, the deer
Right.
can't compete with that because they can't reach that high. They can't eat that much, so they have to move. But encroachments killed us, building houses all over their land and where they live. People got to live too, so that's something we have to figure out. So
Right.
trying to find that, strike that balance is the hard part, John. I mean, we generate a lot of cash and we put a lot of cash back on the ground, and that's
Right.
typically where it's at. It's just one of those things where it's an ongoing, no solid solution. You just have to keep fixing things as it comes along. As you know, in Arizona, in the desert, water is the key. We've been doing tons of water work out here. Some of these units that we put so much money and time into, like Unit 21 and 16A. Game of Fish actually it started out as a mule deer initiative, and then turned into a WEI, which is a wildlife initiative enhancement
Right.
program. And they're taking Pittman Robertson money out of that. For the last 3 years, they've dumped $400,000 a year into those two units, 21 and 16A. Went
Wow.
in there just worked heavily on predator control, water tanks, rehabs, and new catchments, going across and working on different grasslands, cutting at PGAs and try to get it opened up to grass to grow again. And you're starting to see a big change in those two units, 21 especially. 21 is just, I think they've done almost 42 water tank fixes in that, because we had that huge fire about 20 years ago, and they're just demolished all the water tanks because there was nothing to slow down the water. So we go in there and we dig the water tanks back down. We put bentonite in the bottom of it, and then it fills up full of water. And you can see the difference it's making. Solar panels on top of where there used to be windmills, where the
Windmills.
windmills break. They put solar on there now. We put solar pumps in there now. You got water pumping in areas that hadn't had water in quite some time. So the biggest thing we do is we look for opportunities, and we work with those organizations in each state, and ranchers and hunters and volunteers, and we go in there and we take care of business to try to make it better.
So you started mentioning opening stuff up for grass and stuff. Do you do any other land improvement, like habitat improvement stuff, to try to promote? I know, so my degree my second degree is rangeland management and ecology, and I actually did my paper on mule deer, my thesis, and that's going back a few years. I haven't been using it very much, to be honest with you, but I remember when the research that I did, I blocked it in 168 acre segments, and we did a I did a little test down in 30B, so down by the Dragoons, and what I was finding there, the biggest problem over there was cattle and the competition between the cattle. Obviously, there's no elk down there in the Dragoon Mountains, and it's desert, and there was a lot of invasive species, grasslands coming in, or grasses coming in. What are you guys doing stuff like that? Are you trying to improve actual, foraging, and other stuff like that, or is it mainly main focus is on the water stuff and just kind of let them find what they got to eat?
No, I tell you what, too, John, a lot of that stuff with water, it helps a lot of that overgrazing and things like that, because, if you can get water in different pastures, then you can move the cattle out of those pastures and into another pasture, and give that other pasture a chance to regrow itself. And most of the ranchers we work with, they only make 6 months, and they leave 18 months. And it's going to sound weird, but a good rancher is probably one of the best people who take care of the land that
Right.
steward than most people. But to your question, we're working with the National Forest Service, BLM, State Trust Lands all the time. They get with us and ask us, how can we improve this? We want to do a habitat partnership committee through the Game and Fish and get us help cutting this stuff out here so we can transfer things around and have more grass for the cows, the cattle can go and feed on. Obviously, if there's only a couple spots for the cattle to feed on, they'll eat it down to the dirt, and that's the end of that.
Right.
But what we're finding is we have 99% of the good ranchers out there, they really want to try to keep their land healthy. But then there's the guys that just want to eat it up and let it go. But they're getting the National Forest Service and also the BLM, they're getting very particular about how the land is managed. And they're getting to where they work with us heavily to, let's say we have a riparian area, which we all know what a riparian is. Basically, it's a natural water source and trees and
whatnot.
Well, the cattle will go in there and they beat the heck out of it. So what we do is we'll go put a three-rail fence around it so the wildlife can get into it because that's natural. And then we'll put a trough on the outside so the cattle can't beat it up. If in, let's say the Yavapai Ranch in northern Arizona, outside of Prescott, he's the only rancher that allows access on his ranch up there. So we've been working with him, and he uses a generator to go from one pump to the next on the wells and pump water. When the cattle leave that area, he shuts the water off. So what we've done in there, we've started doing a solar panel conversion on each one of those wells, and now we're going to have water for wildlife for the entire year. And what also helps them with is it gives them a chance to rotate that cattle through there and make it healthier. So, you know, if we can help in any way by letting the rancher have more access to better feed for his cattle by knocking the trees out, mastication, cutting, burns, things like that, then we're all for it. And the neat part about it is it helps a lot of the other wildlife, like down south where you're talking about, you know, you got the scaly quail. Some areas you have some pronghorn in there too, and every time we do that, you see all that come back even heavier. So a lot of these groups are the Arizona Elk Society, great group, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Mule Deer Foundation, Arizona Deer Association, all those different groups. Every time they help one species, typically they help quite a few others, and that's what people need to understand. So I don't know. We've heard it a few times. You guys want to help the mule deer so you can kill more mule deer. And you know, that's an ignorant statement. And you know, you have to kind of look at it and smile a little bit and say, no, actually, I'll never hunt down here, you know, no matter what. And they need to understand that it's not just mule deer that we focus on. It's everything above and below that. So, But yeah, it's a big plus when you can work with the ranchers and help them keep their land healthy, you know, or the land that they're actually leasing healthy. And it's an ongoing struggle. I mean, we got like in New York City or Chicago or someplace like that. They don't even know the ranch they're on now. So you get a good ranch manager, he takes care of business. You got one that's just about the money, then you got problems.
And honestly, that way of thinking is really just penny wise and dollar stupid, because if you're messing up the land's got to provide for you for years. You overgraze it. I know around here in town, Phoenix, where they had, I remember seeing mule deer in certain areas, and there was some, you know, local cattle ranching going on. And really now all that's there is just like, you know, creosote or, you know, greasewood or whatever. And there's no other ground cover. There's no forbs. And that's the biggest thing. Like people don't realize how heavily mule deer rely on forbs, because everybody thinks, you know, deer browsers, but really it's whitetail that are browsers, not necessarily mule deer. Mule deer are somewhere between, like you were saying before, they're more almost kind of leaning towards the bovine, you know, the elk and the cattle type stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. But now it's funny, because I just went did a little predator calling in this one tract of state land that used to have cattle on it, and they haven't had cattle on it now for about 10 years, and everything just barely starting to come back. There's a lot of ground cover. I haven't seen any mule deer sign in there because they've all gone, and I don't know if they'll ever come back. Actually, it's probably too segmented now too for them to even get back to it without having to cross streets and whatnot. But
excuse me.
So anyhow,
it's a challenge.
Yeah, for sure. I can imagine. I always thought about that. I was, you know, how big of a undertaking it is, because nobody really realizes you're a wildlife manager. You're also a politician. You're liaison between a multitude of different, because everybody's got an investment. You know, an emotional investment or a financial investment or whatever in all those, you know, when you're talking about land, it's cattle ranchers, recreationalists, you know, your tree huggers, your hunters, and you know, it's just like everybody's got to be happy, and you still got, and you got one goal, and it's just, it's tough. I don't think I could ever.
Yeah.
I like to do private land stuff because it was always just like, okay, you got one guy, he's got one vision, he's got one, you know, goal, and that's it, you know. public land stuff's just atrocious. So,
and Arizona's about 87% public land, which has got its pluses, but on the same side, it does make it difficult. I always tell people, you know, a lot of us, the hunters and wildlife guys that like to get out there and get after it, they get upset with the Game and Fish Department because of what you said. They have to be a part of everything. The wildlife belongs to the state of Arizona, and the Arizona Game and Fish takes care of all that wildlife. So basically I tell them, you know, they're not called Arizona Hook and Kill or Hook and Shoot. They're called Arizona Game and Fish. So, you know, in reality, you got to kind of feel for them. I mean, those guys are something else. You know, they get out there and they do a lot of great things, and they get beat up on by the hunters. They get beat up on by the tree huggers or the non-hunters, and you know, they got a hell of a job to do. And it's not an easy thing to do, but they do a fantastic job. I got to tell you, they do a great job.
Arizona is really, I mean, I deal with a lot of fish and game. Well, not necessarily, you know, to deal with them directly, but I've had a lot of interaction with game and fish throughout the United States. And I think Arizona does a really good job for the most part. You know, obviously everybody's got criticisms or whatever, but I think they do a very good job, and I'm friends with a lot of the guys that work there. You know, from a management standpoint, I think they do great. I think even as even in their draw system and stuff like that, I feel like Arizona is much easier to navigate than some of the other states too. Like, I mean, so anyway, kudos to you, Arizona. You guys are doing a good job. So, So you guys got any upcoming projects?
Well, we are. We got a couple of them right now. As a matter of fact, on the 24th up on the Yavapai, we're putting in a bunch of those big tire drinkers. You know, they use those big old tractor tires instead of using tanks. So we got that coming up. We've got solar panels going across there. State well, which is in unit 39, it's got we're going to convert that state well into a solar panel. That's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. Down south, Clyde Weekly and our guys at the Tucson chapter are all over the place down there, and they could use all the help they could get. So what I'd like to do is, you know, if anybody's interested listening to this program, they want to get in contact with me to find out where projects are at. It's easy to find me, but if you want to, it's thrndon@muledeer.org. So it's my first initial, last name, thrndon@muledeer.org. Get a hold of me and I'll get you involved with those groups down there all over the place. We also have a project review board that's led up by Jim Lawrence, who used to be our state chair, but now is a board of directors for the MDF. And he likes to try to get with everybody and find out where their hot spots are, what they need done. Right. Something that's really cool coming up too, John, is that the Mule Deer Foundation, Arizona Game and Fish Department are actually partnering together, and they're hiring a biologist into the Game and Fish branch over here just for the Mule Deer Foundation to pick areas that we think the mule deer need help the most. And that's an exciting venture. I don't know what's going to come of it just yet. We'll know pretty soon, but I think that's a huge plus for the mule deer in Arizona. And that's going to be helpful. Getting back to the landscape stuff, the National Forest Service is getting a better idea, a different look at what should happen. They're not so anti-fire anymore. They're letting things burn and take over like the natural resource it is. Mm-hmm. And they have huge landscape projects they're getting ready to do up on the Prescott and all the way down to the Hacienda. And that stuff's going to be coming up in 2018. You're going to need a lot of help on that too. So there's tons of work to be done. We just got through doing a couple of mud tanks up in Unit 23. I did bentonite on it. They've got water in them now because of that late rain. Right. And it's ongoing. I mean, I actually had one of the biologists for the National Forest Service, Connell, get a hold of me and ask me about running 8 miles of pipeline to a trough that will take the water to a different pasture like we were talking about earlier.
Okay.
And that's going to take place probably in early September. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
Cool. Yeah, you and I got to talk about those tanks that I was telling you about at the banquet.
Yep.
I definitely want to get on something like that. You know, so guys, if you can, if you got time, you got some energy, something, you know, you want to expend and you want to put a little bit into something, definitely get a hold of Terry and get involved in some of these projects, because, you know, even if you don't have money to donate or whatever, manpower is, you know, just as important, if not more. These guys need help getting stuff done, and it all comes back. It all comes back. Spiritually and literally. So,
well, I tell people, if you go back to a water tank with your grandkid when you didn't have grandkids at the time, or even kids at the time, and there's still deer out there, you're going to say, I worked on that. And it'll get these young people. I mean, kids are everything, John. I mean, if we don't keep these kids involved in the outdoors and show them what habitat improvement is and conservation, we're done. I mean, and we do 5 youth deer camps every year in Arizona for that too. And that's a lot of fun. But at the same time, it's
teaching. Hey, Terry, why don't you re-say that? Because you just got really choppy.
Broke up.
Yep.
You know, the heritage is so important for the kids. We need to get them involved. We got 5 youth deer camps every year, and it's a lot of fun. It gives you a lot of personal pride to be able to take these young people out and show them what hunting's about. But if we don't start teaching these kids from the beginning what's important about conservation, we're going to be in deep trouble in the next 20 years. And sure, it's going to be here before you know it. I mean, I'll be 59 this year, John. It's like I remember when I was 30, it seemed like 2 days ago. So that's how fast it happens.
You don't look a day older than 58, so don't worry about it.
I appreciate that, man. I take my hat off, I'll be 75. That bald head me.
Oh, geez. Well, so this podcast, we try to always have some hunting education. So I'm going to ask you at least 2 questions specific to hunting. Well, I like to ask this of guys like you. So what do you attribute your, you know, consistent success to when it comes to mule deer hunting? Give me a couple of rules.
Patience. Yeah, patience is one. Glassing's number 2. I personally like hunting the high deserts and lower deserts of Arizona. Understanding where the water sources are at, understanding the, you know, the travel routes of deer is important. So, first of all, the biggest thing is get out and start scouting. The first thing you should do is if you want to hunt an area, start walking it. Do grids on it, try to find the secret water spots where there's some springs coming up and things where a lot of people aren't going to be sitting all over top of it. Get off the road a couple of miles if you can. Glass, take your time. Hunt all day long. Don't go back to camp at 10 o'clock thinking they don't move. Big mistake everybody makes out there. And practice your whatever weapon you decide to go hunting with, and make sure you're proficient at it. And lastly, when you do have the opportunity to take an animal, make sure you make a clean shot, follow up with that shot. Don't shoot 1500 yards, walk away, think you missed something, because a lot of times you haven't. And then have total respect for that animal, you know, and that's where it's all at.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's a good one. Are you, do you typically like to sit on water holes, or are you, a strictly glass and stalk guy?
I'm a glasser. I think, water holes are good for young kids. If we get, you know, we know there's activity on that hole, we'll set them up so they can watch it from a couple hundred yards out. But for the most part, I get bored real easy. And if I'm not seeing things, then I can watch. I mean, I might be watching a whitetail, or I could be watching an elk, or I could be watching a bobcat out there 400 or 500 yards with glasses. It keeps me busy. I'm not much into the sitting game, so I need to have something to make me sit, and the glasses do that for me.
Right. Yeah, you know, I get that. It's funny. I tell people all the time, I could go in the Midwest and sit 15 hours in a tree stand staring at the same 30-40 yards. And then I come here and I go pop up a ground blind on a water hole or something. I can't sit 2 hours. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. And I think the difference is really when you're out there in the, like the Midwest or something, you know, you're going to see game, you know, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
A doe's going to come through, or small buck's going to come through, or something, raccoon, squirrel, whatever. But It's so far and few between on most of these, you know, holes out here that you could go several days and not see a quail, you know? And it's like, it takes a certain kind of person to really sit and really, really, really put the time in. But if you are that type of person and you can put in the time and you're slipping in there very low impact and getting out of there very low impact, eventually you could get a really good deer or anything really.
Sure.
Off of water holes here, because they're so
the
dependent on
number one thing
on
you have to do. Oh yeah. I mean, if you walk up on a water tank and you see that's been hit and getting hit by, you know, wildlife, whatever you're hunting, obviously they're going to be there sooner or later. If you know that's the only water source within 8 miles, they're going to be there no matter what. But if you're, we don't help that much because we try to put water sources every 3.5 miles away from each other. And that's really where it needs to be. But finding that little trick tank or finding that that little stream or natural seep, that's where you're going to do your best. And nice and quiet canyon away from the road. A lot of these water tanks are, road dries right up to them. It'll ruin your day. Everybody gets mad about road hunters, but in my opinion, if you're off the road, you don't see them. So, you know, get as far as you can away from that stuff and hunt hard. You know, that's the way it's all at, where it's at. But don't ever forget about the experience itself. You know, that it's the all in hunting that makes hunting so fun. So, enjoy every bit of it. Don't get frustrated. You know, that's the worst thing you can do as a hunter is get frustrated and quit.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you. That's all I got for you today, for coming on and, you know, shedding a little light on what MDF is doing. Why don't you give us, some information where people can find out, you started telling, about your personal email and stuff like that, but where can people get involved with Mule Deer Foundation? How can they get on some of these projects?
Sorry, John, I lost you for a second there.
That's all right.
Are you back?
Yep.
You got me?
Gotcha.
Sorry, I had a phone call come in. sure. Get a hold of, see more of what we do, there's a national website, www.muledeer.org. You can go on there and check out everything, find out where all the chapters are, see what we're doing across the country, and all that stuff that's going on throughout the United States that we're working on a mule deer. You can also find out about legislation that's going on up in the White House that's going to help mule deer along the way. And we've got a couple sites. We have the Mule Deer Foundation /Arizona page on Facebook. And I think if you just put down Mule Deer Foundation, you'll see quite a few things come up on Facebook. But we also have one that's a project page, which is a lot of fun to look at because it shows what we're doing all the time. And if you want to get involved with coming out to the banquets, we actually have one coming up the 17th. I don't know when this is going to come on, but the 17th out in Santan, which is at the Falls. It's going to be a great one. We got an odd ad hunt we're going to auction off out there. This a pretty good one. It's kind of fun.
Where was that on the banquet that I went to?
You know, those guys did such a good job. It was like 4 weeks we put it together. We just didn't have one. But if you want to bid on this one, John, I got a phone number. You can call me anytime you want to, and we'll put the money down for you. So
Sounds good.
It's a great hunt.
I donated some stuff for that banquet because I'm not going to be able to make it. But
very cool. Yeah, Mr. Marshall McFarland probably hits you up. He's a good man. Anytime you guys want to find out something, you're more than welcome to call me at 623-696-5579. Or give me an email at therndon3@muledeer.org. And I always respond to my calls. I always answer my emails. And I'm there for anybody who wants to talk about mule deer and making it better for them.
Awesome. And I'll put that information in show notes, guys, so that'll be easy to access. I encourage you to get out there. You know, if you don't have time, what's the lowest membership cost? Because I think I have a lifetime membership or something like that. So
it's a $35 a year is what it is. You get a magazine every 2 months, and you can get so. I mean, the magazine itself is probably one of the very best magazines out there. I feel Jeff Hunt up in Nashville puts that magazine together for us, and since he's come on board, I mean, it's just taken off. It's a really informative, not a lot of advertisement, mostly good, knowledgeable stuff, and
That's
And it
good.
tells you every state has a state spotlight in it. So it's super cool magazine to have.
Awesome. Yeah, seriously, $35, guys. You like to hunt mule deer? Get in there, support them. Like Terry was saying earlier, it is the only deer species in North America that is, well, is suffering. It's on the decline. It's been on the decline since the 90s. It needs the most help. So, $35 is
It does.
not too big of a chunk out of the wallet. And if it is, but you got a couple of, hours of time you could spend, go lend a hand. Go lend a hand.
Oh
So,
yeah.
well, thanks a lot,
You
Tara.
can
Thanks
always
for
use a
coming
strong
on.
back and a pair of hands.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
So,
Yep.
well, thanks for coming on and sharing a little bit of knowledge with us and helping shed some light on MDF here, and hopefully we'll do something with you guys here in the future, get a project going. Maybe I'll help organize some guys together, and we'll get a interviews with the Hunting Masters or Days in the Wild crew together, and we'll come and knock out one of these water holes that need some TLC. So,
Love to do it. It'd be a lot of fun, man. I appreciate you having me on, John.
absolutely. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.